Where did Jesus go in his personal ministry? 3+ years walking on the earth. What places did he go? The most important ministry and service ever to be had among mankind, where did he choose to go? Well, you might think that, well, he went to the Sea of Galilee. He taught on the seashore the great lessons on the parables. And then he went up into a mountain and taught the Sermon on the Mount. And there were times when he went into the temple and he was in the synagogue on the Sabbath day. And sometimes he was out in the countryside. Sometimes he was on a boat in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Where did Jesus go during his earthly ministry? In the scripture reading that we had this evening, we find that Jesus went to another place that was very important. And it's very important that Jesus continue to go to this place even in our lives today. There were times when Jesus went into people's homes. In Mark chapter 1 and verse 29, this is one of several times in the gospel record where Jesus went into somebody's home. This evening, we're going to talk about how that Jesus is the hope of the home. You know, when I think about God's plan for our lives, it's very encouraging to know that no matter how bad something gets, there's always hope. You ever thought about that? It doesn't matter how bad things get in our life, there's always hope. Somebody says, well, what about a sin in my life? Well, there's hope that you can get rid of that. Well, what about stress and strain and anxiety and worry and problems? Well, there's hope that you can get out of that. Well, what about problems and issues and fussing and fighting and other kinds of things? Well, there's hope that you can get out of that. Well, what if I've messed up and what if I've made some serious mistakes? Well, there's hope that you can get out of that. That's an encouraging thing with God's plan. It doesn't matter what happens in life, how bad it is, He has a hope for all of it. And the same is true for the home. I can't think of a place in our society today where Jesus is needed more than in the home. I'm using the word home in two senses. Jesus in Mark chapter 1 went into somebody's house. Sometimes the word home is used for the dwelling place, and then sometimes it's used for the family, but Jesus went into people's homes. And He is the hope of the home today. High divorce rates, sexual immorality, lack of togetherness, selfishness and immaturity, materialism, and a host of other problems are in the average home. Today, it's gadgets over the gospel. It's gold over God. It's money over the Master. It's friends over the Father. It's relatives over the Redeemer. It's fishing over faith. It's culture over commandments. It's drinking over the divine. It's traveling over the truth. It's the lake over the Lord. It's the world over worship. If there is to be a turnaround in the home, it is to be through the hope of Jesus Christ. But as I mentioned earlier, for every problem that you can think of, God has a solution. And that's the encouragement of it all. And I'm here to tell you this evening that in many cases, the solution is one word. Jesus. Jesus Christ becomes the solution, the hope of the home. the only solution to the pressing problems that are confronting the home today. This lesson this evening is for all of us. I think about the young people here this evening. You're thinking one day, well, maybe I hope to get married one day and I hope to have a family. Even though you might not have your own home right now, I'm here to tell you this evening that Jesus Christ is the hope of that home that you have planned. If you want that to be a success, you and your spouse and eventually the children that come along the way, that is going to be the success of your home. This lesson is for our young people this evening. This lesson is for us this evening if we currently need help with Jesus in our home. This lesson, if it's not particularly for us and maybe things are going fine, maybe we know of someone whom could use the help of Jesus Christ. We need to talk with them while we can and encourage them to let Jesus into their home. He is the one and only solution. It's not more government programs. It's not more tax dollars thrown at this or thrown at that. It's not higher education. It's not culture. It's not a money problem. It's not an economics problem. It's a Jesus problem. We don't want Him anywhere around our home, and we are reaping the benefits and the results. Not the benefits, the results and the terrible consequences of that. So I hope to be reminded this evening that there were some places that Jesus went in His earthly ministry, and one place He went was in people's homes. What a great thing that was. Can you imagine having Jesus personally in your own home? Wow. So in Mark chapter 1, He's in the home of Peter. You turn over a chapter to Mark chapter 2, and verse 15, He's in the home of Matthew. You move forward to Mark chapter 5 and verse 21, you find that He's in the home of Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue. In Luke chapter 7, He's in the home of a Pharisee, Simon. In Luke chapter 10 and later in John chapter 12, He's in the home of Mary and Martha. In Luke 19, He's in the home of Zacchaeus. In Matthew chapter 26, He's in the home of Simon the leper. Where did Jesus go in His earthly ministry? Well, many places, and one of those places is the most needed place. In every home that Jesus was in, typically there was some need or some problem. Sometimes it was a physical need, such as the illness of Peter's mother-in-law, and sometimes it was a spiritual need. But either way, when Jesus left, the problem was gone. And it'll be the same for us today. He was the solution. I find it amazing, not only in our culture, but around the world, the need for Jesus to be in one's home and marriage. And the irony of it is, everybody is looking for the solution, and it's right under their nose, because many places where Jesus needs to be, there's a Bible laying around on a coffee table or on a shelf somewhere. And we need some help. And it's right there. It's right there. Right under their nose. And so I hope this evening we can think about how that Jesus can be the hope of the home, whether it's ours right now, whether it's someone we know, or as our young people here this evening. And I hope that all of our young people here this evening one day will have a happy home. And you've got to understand that it's got to be built on Jesus. To some, when Jesus was in their home, He was the great physician. I think about how He healed people in people's homes. To others, when He was in the home of Mary and Martha, He was the resurrection and life in raising their brother. To others, He was the master teacher. To others, He was the Redeemer and the Savior. He will be those same things for us. We've got to let Jesus in our home. So this evening, I want to look at some areas in which Jesus is the hope of the home. Who is in charge of your house? It's got to be Jesus Christ. Well, I've got a big screen TV at home, and I've got Xbox, and I've got the latest this and the latest that, and we've got a nice car out in the garage, and any time I go to the refrigerator and open it up, there's always something good to eat in there, and I'm comfortable with the air conditioning in the summertime and the heat in the wintertime. Well, I got everything I need. No, we don't. Until we have Jesus in our life. So let's look this evening at Jesus, the hope of the home. It doesn't matter how bad something gets. There's always a hope. And that's the beautiful thing about God's plan. Man messes it up royally. Romans chapter 1, he messes up things royally. But God comes along and always provides a solution and will do that up until the day he sends his son in judgment. We don't have to throw up our hands and say, well, that's just the way it's going to be. We can make changes. And I hope this evening will encourage us to make sure that there's always Jesus in the home. And let's begin this evening by noticing that Jesus is the family hope of the home. And let's notice this evening that if a home has a problem, Jesus will provide the solution. He was in various homes and he provided the solution. Let's begin this evening by noticing that he is that family hope of the home. He's the hope for me as a person who wants to go out on a date that will eventually lead to that person that I marry, that will eventually lead to that person that I have children with. And he tells me that I can flee youthful lusts in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. And I can pick a godly mate. I can be godly myself. And I can look for a young Christian lady or a young Christian man. Because that is the way in which the marriage is going to get off on the right foot and on the right start. That's how the home, Matthew chapter 7, Jesus said, my words and hearing them and obeying them is like a man who builds his house upon the rock. That's not just a VBS song. It's a great one. But it's not just a VBS song. It is a message for us that we have to build our homes and our marriages on Jesus Christ. Well, when we back it up to the dating phase, Jesus is going to be the hope of that. And I need to be patient and I need to act like a young godly Christian myself and I need to be patient and find that other young godly person to marry and not settle for anything less. Some are doing that today and they're just getting off on the wrong foot from the very beginning. Well, there's nobody around me that's a godly Christian today. Well, you might have to look a little bit harder, but they are there. And young Christians today are finding young godly mates. You might have to travel. You might have to go to some singings or some gospel meetings or some young people get-togethers or find some other way, but they are there. And Jesus is the hope for dating. Jesus is the hope for spouses. That marriage would be for life. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 6 that what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. And he gives us the hope that marriage can be for life. And he's given us laws that govern that so that that most fundamental part of the home does not get messed up. Law is good for us. Law structures us. Law keeps us on the right foot and on the right path. So there are several places, Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 and Mark 10 and Luke 16 and 1 Corinthians 7 and Romans 7, where Jesus gives His marriage law in all those passages, He's giving us hope that that relationship will be right. And not only that, but after the marriage, how husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church, Ephesians 5, 22 and following, Colossians 3, 18 and following. And the wife is to respect and submit to her husband, and she's to be submissive in 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 through 7, and he is to care for her in an understanding way, and like a precious vessel. She's going to love him, Titus 2, 4 and 5, just like she loves her children. What is Jesus doing with all of that? He's giving us hope that our marriage will be the way it needs to be. He gives hope for parents. The child comes on the scene. The beautiful baby is born, and we bring that baby home from the hospital, and parenting begins. And He gives us the hope that that can be done right, and it's a very challenging world that we live in today to raise children up. The forces to try to bring them down are everywhere, but He tells us, and He gives us hope. And we can have God's Word in their life, in the home, Deuteronomy 6, verses 5 through 7. We can train up a child in the way that he will go, Proverbs 22, 6. The fathers can teach and nurture and bring up their children, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, in the way that they should go. The mother can be a home manager, if you will, 1 Timothy 5, 14. And that's a hope that those young people will get started off right in a world that is very challenging today. I love the statement, turn with me to Judges chapter 13 with regard to the birth of Samson. I love the statement there of Samson's parents. And it gives us hope. Judges chapter 13. And verse 12, and Manoah said, now let thy words come to pass. What shall be the ordering of the child, and how shall we do unto him? What shall be the ordering of the child, and what shall we do unto him? And God answers that question. The angel answered the question. God answers the question, and He tells us how the child can be ordered and what is best for him. You may know of someone that has just started their marriage. You may know of someone eventually that is going to be bringing children into the world, our young people. One of the best helps that we can give them, one of the best gifts that we can give them is Jesus Christ and the importance of having Him in the home. Just this afternoon we saw where Phoebe Crawford was here with us for a little while going to APSU, and her fiancé, they've just gotten engaged, that he was baptized today. Please pray for Dylan. And one of the first things I thought of when I saw that, Sherry showed me that on Facebook, one of the first things I thought of, well, you know what? They're getting Jesus Christ into that marriage and into that home. And if there's ever going to be any success, it's going to be because of that. What a great thing. And we've just got to have that. We've just got to have that. That is the solution. And that's why you can see in a world and in a culture where homes are falling apart, that's why you see godly homes shining in this culture where they're falling apart. What's the key to success? Jesus is in that home. You show me a home that is a light in this culture, and I'll show you Jesus Christ in that home. He's the hope for the children. Our children have a very difficult place to live, and but there's hope for them. They'll be obedient like Jesus himself was at age 12. He was obedient to them. Luke chapter 2, verse 50 and 51. And then growing up, obedience to God, Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1, that they're going to remember God in the days of their youth. That lets me know things are going to be okay. And as parents and as grandparents and as concerned citizens of the kingdom, we've got to do all that we can to get Jesus in the lives of these young people. That's going to be their only hope of surviving this. I grew up on the original Star Wars movie. Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. Remember that scene? Jesus is our only hope. Things are dark out there. Things are dreary and dark and dim. But there's a light that shines through all of that, and Jesus is going to be that. But not only is Jesus the family hope of the home, Jesus is the preventative hope. Jesus is going to help us prevent anything that might be coming along the way where the devil wants to assail and assault us. If he can't keep us from getting started off on the right foot, both the man and the woman being a faithful Christian and entering into marriage that way and getting the children off to the right start, if he can't keep us from doing that, he's going to try to cause a problem down the road. But Jesus is the preventative hope of the home. Jesus knows that, like a storm is coming, and I preached on this recently, that before the next storm comes, he tells us how to prevent and protect against that and be ready for that. He's the only hope of preventing infidelity. Sexual infidelity is popular, and it's promoted in our society. It's promoted in songs, and it's promoted in movies and music and other areas. Oh yeah, you're just supposed to cheat on your spouse. And whether it's the lust of the eye or the lust of the flesh or lack of self-control or maybe our love has grown cold, whatever the case might be, Jesus will help us prevent infidelity. You know, he touched on that in the Sermon on the Mount when he talked about, you have heard that it's said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But he backed it up and said, well, you don't need to look upon a woman to lust. What was Jesus trying to do with those men that were standing around? What was he trying to do? The Sermon on the Mount is not just some generic, interesting lesson. He's touching on things, you know, there could be some men sitting there or standing there. We got pretty close on that one. He's trying to prevent. He's trying to keep us from going down that road. And his wisdom is even portrayed in the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 2 and Proverbs chapter 5 and Proverbs chapter 7 and Proverbs chapter 9, all chapters talking about how to stay away from infidelity. Jesus will help us with that. And it's everywhere today. That pull, that desire, it's everywhere today. Jesus is the hope of preventing separation. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians 7. Not only does our nation have a high divorce rate, which is around 50%, we'll talk about that in just a minute, upper 40s. We round it off to 50 to make the illustration. It kind of fluctuates up and down, but a very high rate of separation and a very high rate of divorce. There was a time in our own personal lives where we really didn't know anybody that was affected by that. And as time goes on and as the decades go on, maybe we even know those in our own family. My own family growing up was affected by that. But Jesus is the hope of preventing that. And whether separation is caused by a lack of desire to work out problems or something else, Jesus can help us. And He admits in 1 Corinthians 7, verses 5 and 6, that you're going to have problems. He admits that. But let it be for a season, and give yourselves unto prayer, and may be together again, that Satan tempt you not because of your incontinency or lack of self-control. And He's the preventative hope of divorce. Sometimes divorce is caused by selfishness or infidelity or desertion, incompatibility, emotional pain, etc. But Jesus can help us prevent that if we just simply follow His words. If we will love our wife as Christ loved the church, and if she will respect Him, that will prevent that. You see, brethren, these things are not just simply interesting points. It's actually preventing things that are problematic down the road. Jesus was well aware of divorce. The Jews came to Him and asked Him questions about that. He was well aware of that. So when He gives His word to the apostles, and the apostles preach and teach and write those things in the New Testament, a lot of these things are preventing things that Jesus knows could easily come about, even before it happens. And He's trying to help us. He's trying to give us hope. You know, Jesus is the preventative hope of child neglect and child abuse. Our nation's child abuse rate is one of the highest in the world. And shame on us for that. When I traveled to other countries, some of the brethren, and this happened last year in Ghana, can we go back home with you, Brother Reeves, to America? We hear that it's an awesome place. And I kind of chuckled, well, yeah, yes and no. They're, you know, what they see on TV. You know, have anything you want and just buy anything. They don't see the ugly picture. We hear it's a great place. Our nation has some of the highest rates of things that are bad in people's lives. And child abuse, whether it's caused by selfishness or anger or a lack of self-control or laziness, Jesus is there to help us with that. He tells fathers, for example, in Ephesians 6 and verse 4, to nurture and bring up and raise up a child in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. And He tells the mother, Titus 2, 4, to love their children. Not just simply bear children. That's more the easier part. But after they come out and they're on their way, love them. Well, I don't want to do that. And Jesus is there to be the preventative hope for these things that are devastating and hurting people's lives. We've got to let Him in. And Jesus is the moral hope of the home. One thing that is lacking today is a set of morals and ethics and mores and rules that will help us to be better people, because we want to get God out of our lives so much. Oh, we don't need church, and I don't need to attend, and I don't need to read my Bible, and I don't need to pray, and we're reaping the fruits of all of that. Jesus is the moral hope of the home. He will give us that standard that can be in our marriage and in our family that will raise us up to a higher level of living. And ultimately that, as we talked about this morning in Philippians 3, that upward calling, calling us up out of the sin and degradation of the world to look at things above, Colossians 3:1, to set our minds on things that are above and be a better person with a better set of morals and ethics. Instead of just simply having the lust of the eye and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life, 1 John 2:15, He's going to raise us up to a higher level. We don't just simply look at people as objects. And that's one of the problems with the lust of the eye, where the lust of the flesh is just, they're just an object, just a piece of meat, so to speak. Oh. These are people made in the image of God, and we don't look at people like that. And Jesus gives us His word how that we can live godly in this present world, Titus 2:11 and 12. We can have a pure and undefiled religion, James 1:27. Where we get our minds up out of the gutter and we get our lives up out of the gutter and we live a better life. He's the moral hope of the home. And He's going to be that hope of immorality, where we just act any way we want. We need that so much today. He's the hope against materialism. The almighty dollar. Wow, isn't that great? The almighty dollar. Well, look at what that's done for our country, the almighty dollar. Look at what that's done. It abounds everywhere in our society. Oh, we've got the almighty dollar, but we've got the almighty problems. And nobody wants to talk about that. And following Jesus will help us to fight against that. As He taught in Luke chapter 12, verses 13 and following, the parable of this rich farmer, that life is not about covetousness. Life is not about the things that you have. Life is about being right with God. And a few chapters later in Luke chapter 16, when He talks about the rich man and Lazarus. Oh, the rich man, the almighty dollar. But he dies, and he's in torment because his life is not right with God. Jesus is going to help us to get our priorities right. And where godliness is what's profitable, 1 John 4:8. And, I'm sorry, 1 Timothy 4:8, and in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, and just a few verses before that, he said godliness is what we need. Godliness with contentment. Not chasing the almighty dollar. Jesus can help us in so many ways. Our world is about immorality, worldly lust, materialism, and it's about anti-God. Whatever you do at all cost, keep God out of your life. The rise of anti-God messages. Those young people who are here this evening, the college level, you'll see it in secondary education. Professors and teachers try their hardest to instill in our young people in the colleges and universities this anti-God message, anti-Bible message. Turn with me to 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. Jesus will help us to fight against these forces. I'm surprised that we still have God in some areas of our lives, but there are forces at work, and by forces I mean two. Ephesians chapter 6, evil forces in heavenly places, and then just men and women, flesh and blood men and women who are carrying out the devil's will, who are working their hardest to get God out of our society. I appreciate our military here this evening, active and retired. Well, let's get God out of the military and let's get God out of the school system and other places. Well, what you have is 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. What you have in that case is grievous or terrible times. Men shall be lovers of self, lovers of money. Sound familiar? It's kind of like looking at your phone feed or turning on your TV. You're basically seeing modern-day American culture when you read this list. Lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, haughty, railers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection. That's where we don't storge, where we don't just love our own. That's where abortion comes in. I can kill the fruit of my womb. I don't have storge. I don't have that natural love for my own flesh and blood. Without natural affection, implacable, hard-headed, in other words, slanderers, without self-control, fierce, no lovers of good, traitors, headstrong, puffed up, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. But Jesus can help us. And I know of marriages where God and the Bible and prayer are very much in there. And I know of young people who have God and the Bible and prayer and the worship service and the church service very much a part of their lives. And they're going to be okay. But the ones who don't have that are going to have a problem. The young person here this evening that's not married, you need to be thinking about, I've got to pick someone. I've got to pick that young girl or that young man that is going to help me have Jesus in my life and in the lives of my children. Because He is the only hope for us moving forward. To get off to a good start and to finish that all the way to the end. Jesus is the hope of against drinking and drugs. Alcohol has disrupted so many homes. It did even with Noah in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 20, right? If it can happen to Noah, it can certainly happen today. And drugs and alcohol have disrupted so many homes today, but Jesus can fight against that because He tells us in Ephesians 5 and verse 19 with regard to alcohol, we need to be filled with the Spirit. Don't put other things in our body. We can fill our bodies with all kinds of things. Much of it today is damaging. But instead of that, Paul says, be filled with the Spirit. And think about how much better our mind and body is to be filled with the words of the Holy Spirit. Our day is better. Our work is better. Our schooling is better. Our Christianity is better. But when we dump stuff in our body via drugs and alcohol and other things, we are ripe to do the devil's work. Be filled with the Spirit. He's helping us to have a clear mind. Jesus is helping us to have a clear mind and a healthy body. We're in a culture where alcohol and drugs and other kinds of things are so promoted today. And rather than helping people to get off of that and helping them to stop that and work with them in a patient and kind and loving way, we are furthering it. Just last week in New York City, they put out the first of many dispensary machines to come that have crack pipes in it. And they're free. You go to the machine, pull knob one, you get a crack pipe. We are not helping people. That's not loving people. That's not loving them. And the story said that there's more to come. That was the first kind of inaugural plan. The machine emptied the first day. No surprise. The other thing is, in the same machine, you pull another lever and you get the Narcan
which is what you give people when they OD. So in one slot, we help them get messed up. And in the next slot over, well, in case you get messed up, here's the Narcan.
Jesus is the hope of the home. He would never do anything like that. He's going to do things completely different from that to help. And I am sympathetic and loving and kind toward that. And my point with the lesson is, man is not going to help you. He has no hope whatsoever. Jesus is the absolute hope. If we will follow His word and will, He will do all, even, like I said earlier in the lesson, even when that happens in one person's life, it can be very dark, but there's still hope. We've got to follow His message, not man's message. Man's message, all it does is just make it worse. Jesus will help us out of that. And then last of all, Jesus is the heavenly hope of the home. He's going to help us get all the way there. And if there is sin in the home, just like when Jesus came into the home of Zacchaeus, if there is sin in the home, He's going to help us to get out of that sin. Each family member can be saved by Jesus and only by Jesus. He can help us get the sin out of our lives. And when He came to the home of Zacchaeus, salvation has come to your home this day. Now, you and I have to answer the question, do we want to be saved in our home? You have to take charge and do something. Jesus stands right there at the door and He's knocking, but you've got to let Him in. The only way we can go to heaven is to have sin washed away in baptism and then to live faithfully thereafter. And Jesus is giving us the hope that we can go to heaven. But we've got to accept His invitation. And the other thing that Jesus does is He taught about heaven. You see, Jesus was on an earth with people who had the same issues that we have going on today. Human nature is basically the same. They had divorce. They had all these problems that we talked about today. And there would be times when He would preach and teach about heaven. I want to talk about three things briefly before we close this evening with regard to heaven. First of all, Jesus taught about the majesty of heaven. John 14, 1 and following, in my Father's house are many mansions. Jesus taught about the majesty of heaven. It's a beautiful place to go. And He used a word there that means permanent abode or dwelling places. It's a place of permanency and it's a place of beauty. The rest of the New Testament, Jesus taught through His apostles. John, for example, I think about in Revelation 21 and 22, the grandeur and glory of heaven that's described there. Jesus taught about the majesty of heaven. Because that He's trying to get us to go there. And number two, Jesus taught about the means of heaven, the means for which we can obtain that heavenly home. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. John 14, verse 6. It's not enough to say, look at this beautiful, majestic place without telling us how to get there. And Jesus did that. I'm going to ask you this evening, are you a Christian? Are you a Christian? Well, no. Why not? Another question is, are you a faithful Christian? Phil took us through this morning, 1 John 1:9. If there's sin in my life, I need to confess that and get that out of my life. We need to work diligently as an erring child of God to get that sin out of my life and Worship faithfully. Watch alertly. Wait patiently. Are you a Christian? Are you a faithful Christian? Jesus is the means for that. That's why He sent His apostles to preach the gospel to all creation. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Well, I believe, I've just not been baptized yet. Well, you need to do that. And live faithfully. Jesus is that heavenly hope. He's trying to raise us up to a higher standard, not to go to that other place. And what an encouragement that is. And number three, not only does Jesus teach about the majesty of heaven, and not only does He teach about the means by which to get to heaven, Jesus gives us the motivation to going to heaven because He did that as a forerunner for us. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2, He ran that race and made it through life serving God, and He's at the right hand of God, and we're supposed to keep our eyes on Jesus and run that race before us, looking to Jesus. Hebrews 12:2. He gives us the motivation that we can get in behind Him and follow Him all the way there. Brethren, Jesus Christ is the hope of the home. He's the hope of the 21st century home. Somebody says, well, I don't know about it. It's the 21st century and we're pretty modern. It doesn't matter what century you live in. Jesus is the hope. He enters into our lives, if we will let Him, through His Word. Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. God speaks to us today through Jesus. But we've got to let Him in. And Jesus enters into our lives through the example of other godly Christians. That's why it's important for us to be in a local congregational setting on a weekly and regular basis so that we can have the godly brethren, and there are those here this evening who are living godly lives. I want my children to see them. I'm glad over the past few years in moving to Clarksville that Carlin, for example, got to see some of the godly Christians that are sitting here. I want them to be around that. So if we'll let Him, He comes into our lives through His Word. If we'll let Him, He comes into our lives through the example of other godly Christians. But Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, He comes in by invitation only. I stand at the door and knock. You can let Him in or not. And He says to Laodicea, I stand at the door and knock. I don't know if the brethren at Laodicea let Him in or not. We're not told. I hope they did. I hope that lukewarm church let Him in. I don't know. We're not told. He's not going to force His way into your marriage. He's not going to force His way into your home, into your personal lives. And all of those things, young people, that we talked about this evening, He's not going to force Himself into your life when you go out on a date. He's not going to do that. He's not going to force Himself into your marriage, into your parenting, into all those things that we talk about. He's not going to force Himself, but He's going to knock, and He's inviting. He's saying, I'm there for you. Please, let us open up to Him this evening. It begins by becoming a Christian. It begins by understanding that He is the only hope. I see stories all the time where people are on TV almost begging for help with regard to some of these crises that we have going on in our nation. And I'm sitting there thinking, if you would just give me 5 minutes in front of the camera, I would love to help you understand how to fix this thing. I am slowly beginning to see, and I'm hoping that it will continue to move in this direction, but I'm beginning to see, even among secular people, they are starting to make comments. You'll see this sometimes now after these school shootings.
they're starting to make comments to the something like this. We need to do something other than what we're doing. We need to do something other than what we're doing because what we're doing is not working. And I'm thinking, thank you. At least you're beginning to see that you got to do something different. And then I'm hearing comments like this. We've got to get people to help them change their heart or their mind or their thinking. And I'm saying, thank you. At least we're moving in the right direction. Because even secular people are realizing all that stuff that we've been trying before is not working. Maybe one day people will come around to seeing that the hope in a person's life and in the home is through God and Jesus Christ. That is my prayer. But until that day comes for a national level, at least tonight, we as individuals can make sure that He is the hope of our lives. If you know of someone who needs that same hope, let's take that lesson to them while we can. We're going to stand and sing this song of invitation. Jesus can save you this evening. It doesn't have to be at a service. It could be later if you want. It could be at some point, but it needs to be before it's too late. Let's let Him be that hope. I am so glad that in God's plan, it doesn't matter how dark and dreary things are, there's always a light of hope. You can't name a problem that God is not going to give you help with. There's not one problem that God cannot give you help with. What a beautiful thing that is. And it begins with Jesus Christ. And if we can help you to have that in your life this evening, why won't you come as we stand and sing?